I would love for you to start, if you would, and just join us, and then we'll hear from Robin Lind and Sydna Street. And hopefully we'll have some time for questions afterwards, and hopefully these presentations and the questions will stick with you, and we'll continue with them alone. So, Seth Schaefer, thank you.
Thanks, Wheezy, and thanks for asking me to participate tonight. When I walked in, it looked like everybody self-selected by maturity level, their tables, so I was sitting with no adults, which was, I think, appropriate for me. I didn't read the little questions that are at the various tables. I hope everybody else has. I was reading them after Wheezy pointed them out, and the first thing, and maybe mine didn't because of the age level of my table, but is the Christian community more than attending service on Sunday? And does involvement, other aspects of our common life, is that essential to creating a sense of belonging, nurturing faith, and strengthening of community? I mean, I couldn't agree with that more. Without overstating it, to me, it's that sense of the community has almost come to replace Sunday, which, if I give you a little background, you'll see what a transformation that at least has been for me. My connection to St. Mary's started a long time ago, maybe not as long as everybody in the room, but longer than probably my face has been seen here regularly. My in-laws, when they moved to Richmond, tried out various churches and ended up selecting St. Mary's back when I think there was just little St. Mary's. There's probably people in the room who can confirm that. Martin's saying yes. So they were parishioners here for a very long time. So my connection started through my wife and her parents. And as we were dating, living in Washington, D.C., and then later New York, we'd come back for Easter, and I'd attend a service. We'd come back for Christmas, and we'd attend a service. And I found that I really, really liked it. I liked that it was familiar to me. I was raised Catholic, and so much of what we did was similar to the Episcopal service. But I actually kind of liked more and was, I guess I had more of a positive impact on me were the differences between the two services. So whenever we visited, I never really shied away from, you know, we're here for 48 hours. Sometimes you have this, I've the New Jersey Turnpike ahead of me. Do we really want to go to church before we hit the road after a visit? And my answer was always yes, because it was such a refreshing, lovely, simple, pure service that I came to really, really enjoy during my visits. But that was really for a long time my only exposure to St. Mary's. Karen and I eventually moved here. Before we moved here, we were married here at St. Mary's. Then we moved, and then Luke, Anna, and Hal were all baptized here. Anna's here, decided to listen to this instead of play, which I thank her for. The kids have gone to Sunday school here. The kids have attended St. Mary's Episcopal School. And then somewhere along that very long line, I actually became a member officially, which if that line's here, and this is the beginning and the end, I kind of became a member here officially. I just approached John Miller one day and said, "Do you think I could become a member of the church?" And he said, "Sure." He's like, "I've always considered you one. Let's make it official." Well, I think we've been living here for 7 years at that point. But there became a time when, you know, Carrie and I were considering other churches for various reasons. And I don't remember, honestly, a discussion about, you know, what we're going to do about it. I just remember a lot of discussions about, was it the right fit for us? And the result was, and I credit Carrie's parents a little bit here, you know, one thing I think you take in lessons from what you observe, sometimes without knowing it. And I think subconsciously we saw that so much of what my in-laws, and they're Pat and Barclay Zimmerman, for those who don't know, I keep saying in-laws, what they showed us was, what they got out of it really was directly related to how much they put into it. Pat, along with Pat Gibb, served the seniors for a long time. Barclay was on the vestry. So they really committed a lot of time and energy to the church over the years. And we said, you know, again, I don't remember actually saying this, but it seems to be what we did. We really committed ourselves before leaving the church to giving it 100%, to not just come on Sunday. That was all we were doing for many years. And so Carrie and I committed when there was a transition with the Sunday school from kind of ad hoc teachers, parent volunteer teachers, to a year-long commitment. I think we're one of the first families to sign up to be teachers for a year. And for Carrie, that was really a big commitment because that is not her favorite thing to do. I think she'll be okay with me saying that. But, you know, that was the start of really recognizing how much we could get out of St. Mary's by putting more into it, being more active. Again, though, it was still just Sundays, and that time it was service or Sunday school. So for a year, we committed to teach Sunday school instead of go to service. Obviously, we missed the services, but, you know, we really got to engage with people a little bit more than we had just sitting in a pew. I still don't think that was quite enough. And it really picked up after that, though, with Carrie joining the fellowship committee. I think she's also on the Children's Faith Committee. And I decided, and we got involved with the PAC, which is now the Dovers. But I still felt like something was missing, and maybe it was because after a year of meetings with the Parish Advisory Council, which is now the Dover group, I felt like meetings really weren't fulfilling to me. And one Saturday in February, I showed up here with 20, 30 other volunteers, and we were unloading trucks for Caritas. And I'm making real conversation. The guard that people just naturally have at a, you know, over cocktails or even at a parish dinner kind of comes down when you're in your sweatpants and your back's breaking under the weight of these rugs and you're following the stern direction of Paul as you're putting them exactly where they belong. You know, people have real conversations. You really get to know somebody in a way that you don't in the 30 seconds that you hand off a child at Sunday school and say, you know, we'll be at the playground if, you know, if we're not in the classroom, we're in the playground. You know, it was better than just sitting in church as far as connecting with people, but it still seemed pretty superficial. And I just recognized immediately that Caritas for me, and I'm sure there's so many other opportunities for service that I'm not aware of, but that for me was it. And that was something that I enjoyed doing. It was rewarding to me to know that I was doing good for others, but it also really built the strength of my commitment to St. Mary's and made me feel more connected to the St. Mary's community. So throughout that week, I stopped by. I drove folks to the YMCA for showers. I felt really good after that. I felt like I met people. I got to know people, not just people at St. Mary's, but the people we were serving, the people who worked at Caritas. So, you know, fast forward 6-8 months, and I get a call from Wheezy. And I've been talking with Wheezy a lot. I'm the chair of the St. Mary's school board, and we've been working through some things and talking all the time. So I wasn't terribly surprised to get a call from her, but she said, I have a favor to ask you. And she said, will you co-chair Caritas with Jan Betts? And I said, sure, I'd love to. And I kind of caught some surprise in her voice. Like I was going to say, let me think about it. Let's I have to check my calendar. Let me talk to Carrie. But I've known Jan for a long time, so that was, you know, an easy decision for me to make. The opportunity was almost like I would have been asking her if she wasn't asking me. So I was honored to do it. It was probably one of the most fulfilling things I've done in the last year. We had an amazing committee. For those who read my reflection a week or two ago, I really mean that when you're working with people, that's when you get to know them. You roll up your sleeves and you do things. And there's this unspoken sense of accomplishment and fellowship that is built through service, through labor, through work, that I think is really unique and can't be replicated any other way. And that was my takeaway from it. It's made me feel more part of the St. Mary's community. And I feel like instead of all the people thanking me for doing it, I should be thanking them for letting me do it. I can't thank enough the committee, though. The commitment by the committee was amazing. There's clearly people who got onto this do more for the church and you'll get more out of it thing way before I did. Jan and the committee members that she recruited on had been doing it for years. Her husband, Martin, literally put in more hours than any committee member here. I think he was here 5 hours a day, every day, the entire week. So thank you publicly. It was just an amazing opportunity for me, and it helped me become more closely tied to the community. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Somewhat taken aback to think that I actually taught Carrie Zimmerman in Sunday school and didn't turn her off the church. And I think back then we had something like less than 30 children in the Sunday school. And 15 years later we had over 600. That's what happened between 1980 and 2005. But I have a different narrative, of course. Maybe one of the different takes on this. When I said there's a place, as Seth said, where our children went to Sunday school, where my brother Sandy was buried, out there in the stone that was... He wanted to be closest to the road so that they couldn't widen the road and damage the church. So that's this stone out there, the marker. It's where my younger brother Chris helped me bury my parents' ashes. It's where my younger brother Chris's ashes interred. It's where my space is reserved. But for me, St. Mary's is a community built around stories. And I think of the Book of Friends, which, I don't know whether you've seen that, Wheezy. That was, I think, our first official membership listing in 1991. We didn't have photographs back then, but we did put a little color in there for the initials. And the book said, the listing includes not only present communicants and baptized members, but also friends of St. Mary's Church who are a joyful part of our life together as a community. And community, communicate, and communion all share a common Latin root, communicatus, communicare, and communio, to share things in common. And for those of you, none of you in this room, of course, missed the time change this past weekend, but some 30-some years ago, I came at 10 o'clock for the 9 o'clock service, having forgotten to change the hour. And Holt was standing in the parking lot alone. Everybody from the 9 o'clock service already left. Nobody else had come. And he looked at me and the two children and he said, come on, let's go. And we went inside and went straight up to the top. He gave us a blessing and he said, you're done. And that's one of those stories that I appreciated very much. A very quick service. And I also remember seeing Holt and Isabel sitting up on the dais on Holt's last Sunday as rector, and reminding the community that things change, and that the IHS on the holy table was the Greek initials for Jesus. It did not stand for Isabel and Holt Souter. And in my mind's eye, I can see Charlie Wingo standing just behind Holt in the early days, with his hand in his pocket, where he always kept a blank pledge card for an unwary newcomer. So he immediately give it to him. And I remember Charlie's wife, Flo, they both sat in the back in the corner, telling me in no uncertain terms that it was not proper for children to accompany their parents going up the aisle to take the collection. She wanted to know that. I see Jim Burnham's face, bright blue eyes, wonderful smile, taking on his own personal ministry to greet everybody like a lost brother and sister coming into the house and making sure that somebody greeted them. Now, Jim, unfortunately, was promoted to glory, so he wasn't able to get a hold of Buck Blanchard, but Buck kept on coming anyway, even though he said that nobody spoke to him for the first 5 months he came to St. Mary's. I think about taking a call from Margie Miller one late Saturday night when John had strep throat, Holt was up in Maine, and our second backup, Boyd Howarth, was already committed to another church, and Margie said, John says you have to take the service. I thought, oh, that's unusual. But I did. And I used the prayer for rain, which you probably all know is on page 828 in the Book of Common Prayer. And that afternoon it rained, as Jimmy Massey constantly reminded me afterwards. I think about Alan Wagner taking me to the woodshed after a service in which I thought I had teased him rather gently about his opposition to women at VMI. And boy, did I get a dressing down. And I think about Wally Stettinius coming out to me at the Sandy Stone a year after he died, recognizing my grief and trying to work through my disbelief, and speaking from his own inner understanding, and I realized that he had lost a brother that he was very close to. And he knew what I was going through. And I think about the fun times in St. Mary's, watching John Miller trying to avoid my gaze when we were reciting, reading together Psalm 104 and getting up to verse 33, which I know Frank Aiken will tell you is the biblical injunction in support of tobacco. He toucheth the hills and they smoke. And John would always try and look away so he wouldn't see my face, so he could stop himself from bursting into laughter. And when Sandy and I were singing in the front pew there, John would be trying to watch and lip sync to see when we were singing John Bunyan's favorite hymn, He Who Would Valiant Be, whether Sandy and I would indeed transliterate the last line into our school choir favorite to be a grim pill rather than to be a pilgrim. And I think about Hilary Long, when she was senior warden, telling us the parable of the two nickels, which I took very deeply. And for the past 25 years, I have always brought two nickels, and I've given one to Bob Swinson in the pew behind me. And the two of us made a very loud clunk as we put it into the collection plate. So there have been two nickels in the collection plate for at least a quarter century. And I think about getting to Little St. Mary's with Bill Street. And there were no ushers. And so we both took up our post to welcome people. And the look of surprise and delight on his face when his son, Bill, showed up with a beard, which he had not seen before. That was quite something. And I think about Jane Cunningham. She's not here, I'm sorry. Her story about attending St. Mary's for the first time when she and Jack were looking for a church home. And in John's sermon, she looked down on the floor and there was a baby copperhead slithering along under the pews. And she took it out with a prayer book, bam, in the middle of the sermon. And that gave a whole new meaning to Holt's description of St. Mary's as being snake belly low. And over the years, I've come to realize that what it means to be low church, what it means to be high church, and that if I want people to tolerate my low churchiness, I need to tolerate their high churchiness. And remember, and it was probably Bob Hetherington who put that idea in my mind, that Jesus did not say, come and worship me in this way, but he said, go, fear not, do, serve, love one another. So it doesn't matter whether you're high or low. And 2 years ago, I watched Jimmy and Joy Massey come in at 10 o'clock, not realizing we hadn't yet gone on to the summer schedule. And I remembered Holt. And so I immediately summoned Eleanor Welford, and she came and gave them a 3-minute blessing, and they were done. And I think about hearing Jane Dufresne 6 months ago in this room explain the importance of St. Mary's in her family life, saying, "St. Mary's has kept us whole," which I think is true for everyone in this room. And I think about Christopher Brookfield explaining to a visiting preacher one Sunday, and I heard him, overheard him, telling him that the fellow in the front row who is taking notes is not an examining chaplain. But it's true, I used to take notes. And I'm very glad to say that I've got 6 years of sermons to reflect back on, which I do from time to time. And there's one in particular that I'd like to share now. Some of you might remember it from April 25th, 1993. John Miller talking about having gone out to lunch. He said, "Grace Place was a holdout from the 60s, where everything is organic, including the staff. It's a restaurant that time forgot. There were a man and woman at a window table 10, 12 feet away. It was companionship. They were bread sharers. My intuition was on full alert. I knew I was being drawn to them. And suddenly she turned around and said to me, 'Hello there, how are you?' 'I'm fine,' he said. 'How are you?' And he said, 'My mind was running through a mental Rolodex. I couldn't place them, couldn't recognize them. They couldn't stop from continuing me in their long-distance conversation. And then I realized they must have spotted my clerical collar, and I had to prepare for a religious conversation. She asked me my name and church that I served, then grasped her companion's hands and said a prayer for the beauty of the day, the food, companionship, and for John Miller and the people of St. Mary's. Amen. She gave me a piece of paper, said, 'It's my birthday, and I'm spreading the good news.' Said, when I came over to shake hands, she said, 'No, you're not getting away with that,' and she embraced me. This couple is from Lynchburg's Habitat Project. They know Sam and Nancy Cardwell, who were good members of this church. They know about St. Mary's, and they know about Goochland Fellowship. Those are just some of the stories that I cherish that helped me with my sense of community at St. Mary's."
Thank you, Seth and Robin. Wonderful. Forgive me for reading. At my age, I just cannot be sure that I'll finish any sentence. It's just things change. Is this too close?
No, it's good.
Okay. St. Mary's community. Three parts. The first part, we arrived at St. Mary's in the early 60s. There was only the little church, one service at 11 for a very small congregation. In all, I think we were about 150. It was like an oasis from city noise and life's busyness. Besides weekly worship, we enjoyed supper at the parsonage. It was sort of like a little mom and pop organization. We were each given a job, and we all participated, because that's the way it was. My husband Billy served on the vestry as a register, and I was the nursery, which was in Elizabeth's office, New Elizabeth, Laurie's office. Just this time, we didn't have any of all these other buildings. But that was the nursery. We worked hard on our successful Christmas bazaar. Was anybody else here? Hello. Eva. The outreach we all supported, goodwill projects in the area. And that was that's our way of going. We were very fond of our life here. But life, as it will, took a turn when Billy's company expanded west. Moving and separations have always been hard for me, and moving from this intimate, family-like community felt like coming apart at the seams. But move west we did. First to Texas, then Maryland, and then California. With each move, we were fortunate to settle into a vibrant, active Episcopal church. The consistency and constancy of the Episcopal way was important to our stability. Now, of course, we had been properly taught. We carried the same philosophy of participation from St. Mary's to all three churches. And there we taught Sunday school, served on vestries, ushered, taught Bible studies. We learned that through participation, we soon became a part of each of these communities. Small groups were always the gate to deeper involvement. And in two out of three, an individual came forth with a special invitation. It was quite a newcomer delight. Part two. Fast forward to the early 80s. Our family, who had been many miles apart from here, returns to Goochland and became a part of the parish family. Again. Returning, Billy again served on the vestry as property chairman, and I was given opportunity to train as a lay reader, and co-chair our adult education forum, in which the community and guests shared faith stories. At the same time in my life, my hunger for deeper knowledge, fierce hunger, for deeper knowledge and involvement led me beyond the church campus. A joint degree from Union Seminary and VCU's School of Gerontology gave me the foundation I sought, and then I honed skills at Virginia Institute of Pastoral Care and Richmond Hills School of Spiritual Direction. Very soon, I found myself serving as a chaplain for the Hermitage in Cedarfield, both Methodist retirement communities. Ironically, the population that won my heart was those due to physical and cognitive losses were most separated from home, loved ones, and their beloved faith communities. I knew how that felt. I found that in spite of the enormous loss these people were suffering, the spiritual portion of the person was well and alive and ready to be connected. Often as we sang the old hymns, I saw faces light up. And as they received Holy Eucharist, I saw tears and heard utterances of joy from crippled frames. St. Paul said, Christ must grow while I diminish. And it was Christ, the Christ in us, that I was blessed to serve and nourish. Today, in my seventh year of widowhood, St. Mary's is again an oasis. My involvements are directly related to my former experiences. As I serve as an LEM, lay Eucharist minister, I catch the joy no matter the age or circumstance. The same is true with pastoral care teams. The visits when I carry flowers from the altar or the elements of Holy Communion from our table. I participated in a grief group immediately after Billy died and later helped facilitate another one. I've met with small groups that we call Be Still, the contemplative prayer, and quiet days. In the cemetery, our family has placed a rock on Billy's grave where I can sit and be still. Shopping with clients at Goodson's Fellowship Food Bank blesses me weekly, sort of like what Seth was saying with Caritas. Wonderful experience. And that goes on and on and on. Lastly, I mentioned my two grandsons, Ian and Will, who participate in the confirmation classes with Matt. I can't say what a joy that is for Grammy. So that's a lot about me, but that's my story with St. Mary's, and it's just a wonderful parish and community, and I'm very grateful for being here. Thank you.
Wow. Three very different, beautiful stories, and I think each and every one of you has your own story, and I hope all of our stories continue to grow. But I wondered, first of all, if anybody has any questions for Seth or Robin or Sidna. They'd love to hear them, I'm sure. That's okay. I mean, I think they've given us all plenty to think about. And we love the idea of hearing stories and sharing stories, and we'll continue to find more opportunities to do this, and have been talking about it actively as a staff, because we don't want to lose these wonderful memories that each of the three people who's talked has given us and that so many of you have, so we'll continue that. But we have a very vibrant community, and we're so grateful that each and every one of you is a part of it, and that you're helping us to make it even more so. So please enjoy the rest of your conversation. I hope you'll be back next week for evening prayer, another delicious supper, and spreading out a little bit and thinking about how we're connected to the Diocese of Virginia and how important that is to who we are as St. Mary's. So thank you so much for being here. And once again, thank you for a delicious supper too. So. Mm-hmm.